Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
We've been talking about Childline this last few days on the Late Late Show and indeed on this programme. As you know, it's a charity we have a great time for so many obvious reasons. And as you might have heard, fears are growing for the Childline nighttime service. This may have to close. And the stark fact of the matter is that perhaps 45,000 calls that Childline currently answered by night will go unanswered. And that is a shocking thought. Childline has issued an emergency public appeal for funding to raise the €1 million plus it needs to keep the 24-hour service operational. Now, they know they got a bounce on Friday night thanks to the generosity of the Irish viewers and the Irish public following the chat with Caroline and Saoirse Ronan and David Coleman. But this morning we're joined by Kate, who was once upon a time a user of the service. And you're very welcome, Kate. Thanks for coming in to us. You had a desperately difficult early few years. I mean, from the age of what?
Well, I don't really know the specific age, but like
right.
very early.
Okay.
Maybe
so
below three anyway.
Until
12.
Okay. We don't need to get into, I suppose, tremendous detail in the sense that it's all implied, but can you give us a rough outline of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, there was a family member who I was sexually abused by for those years. Not just sexually abused, I mean, within sexually abused, obviously there's an awful lot of emotional abuse. And, you know, had a very, on the outlook, lovely family and, you know, still have a lovely family. But it was something that I was very, it was my secret, unfortunately. And I was very silent around it and carry that with me.
Yeah.
So living, growing up as a child in what is a very lovely world and a loving family, and then having this happen, it's very difficult thing to grasp when you're a kid.
Because you're so young, you don't have a perception of what is real and what is unreal, and also what is right and what is wrong.
Well, I did know what was real. Okay, I knew everything that was happening.
Okay, yeah.
And I had a sense that, you know, from an early age, I had a sense of, well, there's something not right about this, because obviously I was being, you know, manipulated to not be saying things and, you know, to keep things to myself. And it meant that I put on this smiley, happy face, which wasn't necessarily true all the time. But the right and wrong, as I grew older and, I was in a really progressive school and they were really, they tried their best to be really educational with sex education and everything else. And it was through that I started to go, oh, this really isn't right
at all.
What's happening to me wasn't okay.
Even as it was happening, as you kind of got into kind of 7, 8, 9, I feel a bit sick even thinking about it, but to be honest with you, but this was your story.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary that you'd come into studio and tell the story, so thank you for that.
Oh yeah, well, I really believe that people, I do believe there's a stigma attached to talking about being sexually abused.
But you know why that is?
Well, I know why that is, but unfortunately, I think that sometimes the stigma of shame is attached to the person who's been abused.
Right. Very often the same thing with domestic violence and everything else.
And
exactly.
And it's we need to overcome that. I feel very strongly about that we need to overcome that, because it's something that happened to me, but it's not something that is going to keep me in a particular mode.
Except, so why does the stigma and the taboo remain? Given that you did nothing wrong.
Well, that's a massive, because as an Irish people, and I know this is my own opinion, but as the Irish people, we're devils for avoiding the reality.
Exactly.
We're devils for pushing things under the carpet.
Yes.
And the other thing is that we don't want to see it. We don't want to talk about it. Yeah. We don't know how to. We're embarrassed, whatever reasons. And we then like to label that, oh, that person, oh, that happened to them, that's why they're messing up, or that's why they're a bit broken. And that's not the truth.
Yeah, no, you're so 100% correct. And when you think of this other business of not wanting to talk about it, that's an issue too, because that you would have stayed quiet until you were in class and they were telling you, this is what happens when a man loves a woman or a woman loves a woman, whatever happens, this is sex, essentially.
Yeah, well, this is how babies are made. It was mainly because it was a girls' school, so we were talking about menstruation, and it was, you know, in my head, you know, as a kid, kids learn all this stuff and then they come up with different things. And I know I was very confused about it, not very confused, but just sort of suddenly realised that, oh, because I could make a baby. Oh, God, you know, and just it sounds innocent and it sounds naive, and I don't want to make a joke of it. I remember at the time, being that small kid, and I just started talking to my best friend about stuff, but just in the case of, I don't want to have a baby. That was the fear. you know.
At all, or with the person who's abusing?
Yeah, well, I was nine, so I was like, I don't want to, you know, it was all about me. It was all about, I was, you know, what was happening to me was not in my control. And then I thought, and something else could happen to me, and then everybody would know. And I was just caught up with the stigma of it.
Did anyone else know what was happening to you? Was it very much done in that sort of nasty?
I don't know. As in, obviously no one in my family knew what was happening. My best friend in primary school, she knew for a little while. And she was, you know, it was amazing because she was the same age as me. So the impact on her was huge. And she was so strong to have supported me. And it's because of her that I disclosed, that I told.
So how old were you when you were discussing it with her initially?
I would have been nine onwards.
And did you know what you were talking about at nine?
No.
With her, you were saying this happens.
Yeah.
And you were told this is our secret, right? That awful nastiness. Yeah. But yet you did tell your friend
anyway, because
you were nine, saying, how was your day today? Yeah. This is what happened to me. This is what happened to you.
Exactly.
Did she? So neither of you comprehended the
enormity of it.
And
no.
the enormity of it. And yet you were discussing it.
Mm. Yeah.
What a peculiar and sad conversation.
Yeah, it was, and it became, and unfortunately, it became quite a normal conversation for a while. Do you know? So, as in, it was just something that we talked about once a month or once every 2 weeks.
Did you cry?
No.
Because you didn't think there was.
No, I cried on my own. I'd have times when I'd cry on my own or I'd be very upset.
Did you know why you were crying?
I did know why I was crying, but it was mainly because I felt angry. But didn't know it was anger that I was trying to express, and also really alone. You know, I couldn't, like, having spoken to my best friend, that was one thing. But there, you know, I was still a kid. I still wanted somebody to see. And then collapsed with all of that was the fact that I thought, well, it must be me. You know, it must be me. I must be the person that's making all of this happen. Yeah.
Well, what else would you think?
Yeah.
And then on the face of it, it's, as you say, happy families. I mean, because the others didn't know. You continued a pace. You went to school. You were playing games in the schoolyard. Yeah. And then you had to face this horror that was... I suppose you had to live two lives.
But that's it. It's completely like living two lives. And with the abuser as well, living two lives. Putting on a face of, happy days, even though it wasn't.
Yeah.
There was this underbelly, you know?
You know, when you think about people talk about the abusers, we're not going to talk about a specific person, obviously, but just abusers broadly speaking, that they we all think that they look like Father Brendan Smith or something, like monsters.
Mm.
They don't.
They don't.
They do not. They work. They work beside you. They they live near you. They they you know, you pass them on the street. You sit beside them on the bus.
Well, that's it. I mean. I know that on the outside, from the outside, my family situation, my family dynamic looked very normal, very nice and very, you know, church going, all the usual stuff. And but actually inside it was fairly rotten because this one person was, you know, emotionally abusive, manipulative, domineering, and obviously was sexually abusing me. And so for a long time it meant that a lot of men for me would have been off limits in terms of I wouldn't trust a lot of men. And now I've really, really changed that.
Yeah,
you know,
of course. We'll get to that in a second because we need to try and find our way out of the darkness.
Absolutely.
And this is where Childline comes in.
Yeah.
You're nine, you're talking to your friend, you're coming to a realisation that this isn't good. Mm. So where do we go from here then, Kate?
Well, what started to happen was that, you know, obviously having the conversation, and I knew that I was going to have to tell, and I kept putting it off and putting it off because I was afraid. And there started to be ads for Childline on the television, the Childline number, and it's registered in my head, and I was like, I'm going to ring them. And it took a lot of planning, and you know, I think more the planning was something that sort of got me through a lot of stuff. I don't know how many months I planned, or it felt like months, so it could have been 2 weeks, it could have been 6 months, and then I made the first call.
So as you were being abused, you were thinking, it's okay, I'm going to get out of this because I'm planning this call.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, it's not that I'm going to get out of this and stop the abuse. I'm going to call and talk to somebody and they can help.
Okay, so you make the call.
I made the call.
I presume, what age were you then? 12?
I'm not completely sure of the age. I was between 10 and 11 for the first call.
Okay. What was it like picking up the phone at that age?
It was fine. I was nervous about what to say. I didn't have the language of what to say as well.
Of course you didn't.
And, you know, I rang, and the conversation that I remember having, I implied a lot of things because I couldn't actually verbalise it properly. But having the person at the other end of the phone to just hear me for the first time, it released so much pressure. It released so much fear from me. Yeah. And I mean, I remained anonymous. That was a big part for me because I didn't want my mum and dad finding out. And I didn't want them finding out about me being abused, not about the, me calling Childline, which obviously would have a knock on. But it was something else. And I know that I cried a little bit, but I was very numb to it, numb to the crying. But what was just afterwards, the relief that I felt was big. And I remember shaking, but I remember just it being powerful to have been able to say something to somebody.
You detonated your first bomb in your escape.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, but it's been something that I've then ever since learned how to, continuously learn how to speak and force myself. I do have to force myself sometimes to talk about it because it's hard. And each day is a battle of you know, oh, how am I today with it?
Yeah.
But Childline was the pinnacle of being able to speak.
Did you progressively make more calls then?
I utilised the service in a erratic way in that the first time I called, I didn't ring for another 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And was the abuse continuing?
The abuse had stopped because I stopped it.
How?
I told my mum. And when I told my mum, then obviously the abuse stopped after that. And, you know, obviously there's still an awful lot of trauma to have been dealing with, and I still couldn't verbalise it, which was unfortunate. When I was sitting in a room with somebody or with counsellors and they were asking me to talk about it, I couldn't talk about it. But 2 years later, there was, my parents had split up and there was an awful lot of other stuff that had gone on, you know, family dynamics. And I rang them again. And I rang them again because I felt completely isolated and alone. I didn't have the structure there that I needed around me just at that time to be able to speak to anybody. And that's nobody's fault. That's how I felt, that I didn't have somebody to reach out to and just say everything that I needed to say and express anger, express fear, you know. And Childline was there.
And they were there, and you were able to, as you say, just get the phone, get something off your chest. Is that it? Is to that sense of release of information that you've been pent up and?
It's pent up. It's also somebody just listening to you. Who you are in that moment. Somebody just listening to you.
Humanizing what was otherwise an abstract event in your life.
And somebody listening to a child, because children, while they get listened to and while there's lots and lots of measures, and it's different now to when I was a kid, children's voices often get completely swept under the carpet.
Correct.
People don't realise what's actually there for them.
Yeah.
And Childline listened to me.
Just listening to your story, you know, child abuse is, of course, doesn't know class and doesn't know time.
Mm.
Unfortunately, there will always be these monsters. You know, but all we can do is try and stop the relentlessness of it.
Well, I think that we should focus on it from another point of view.
Yeah, tell me.
I think we should just focus on it from the view of empowering children and protecting children and listening to children.
Do you think we do that in this country?
I think we do that. We're starting to do that.
Do
I don't think we're nearly there yet at all. But I do think instead of focusing our energy on the perpetrators and focusing our energy on the negativity, mm-hmm. focus our energy on the kids.
And educate.
Yeah.
And this is where the Childline thing comes. Did you ever call Childline and the phone wasn't answered?
I phoned a few times and the call wasn't answered. I phoned from call boxes. And like, this is back in the 90s as an angsty teenager who really needed to speak to somebody.
Yeah, well, you did. Of course you did. Yeah.
And it wasn't answered. But I did ring back a few times. That was when they had, you know, obviously they had an awful lot of calls. And the calls just grow. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you've got the figures in front of you there. But they have 1,800 calls a day now at the moment. 1,600 of those go answered. The rest don't.
Yeah, that's actually quite an upsetting figure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's beyond just another headline. If you think of your story and that phone not being answered, how anyone can't think that, you know, let's find a few bob in your pocket to see what you can do. But just so you know, it's the appeal is about saving the Childline 24-hour service, and you can donate. Let me give the details now because we're here. Your €4 text donation can be made by texting Childline, all one word, to 57911. We have details up on the Facebook page. There's a photo there of myself and Saoirse Ronan. So go to that picture and the details are there. It's savechildline24.ie. And with any luck, people might be able to do what they can. Text says, Jesus, Ryan, I know what that girl is talking about. The shame of that these people make you feel.
Mm.
It's great that she's talking about it. There was no Childline when I was abused. So that, again, in itself would suggest that if it was there, she would use it and could use it.
It's a facility.
Is it difficult for you to talk about this, or have you reached a point in your life where you feel almost evangelical in your need to talk about it?
I don't. That's kind of a funny question, because I don't think that talking about it is a problem anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that somebody wouldn't ask me a question, or if the context is out of place, it suddenly could knock me for six. Mm-hmm. But I feel strongly that I'm never going to hide it.
Mm.
And I feel strongly that, you know, I'm sitting here in front of you. Mm. I go out tomorrow, I go out today, and, you know, my name is Kate, but this is one part of one thing that happened to me, and I speak about it because so many other people are unable to speak about it in some ways. Mm. And I know that I'm pleased that I can speak about it. It doesn't make it easy or at all.
And are you in ongoing counselling, or
no? No,
all
I'm not.
Over
yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
you've gotten on with your life as
a
way.
Getting on with my life. I did a lot of counselling. I also read a lot of books and spoke to a lot of people.
Okay,
you know, so I've got very, very good people in my life.
How is life?
Life is brilliant.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you happy?
I am.
Seem happy. I think it takes guts. I know you probably don't want to hear that, but I just think it takes tremendous bravery to come on and talk about it. But as you say, people, whenever you say that about somebody who tells a story, if they've been unwell or if they were abused, they say, no, I'm not a hero. Mm. This happened to me.
Mm.
I didn't go out and solve a crime or do something.
Unfortunately, something dreadful happened to me. And from that, which was, I was talking to Caroline outside earlier.
Yeah.
From that, I do believe it's yin and yang. It's darkness into light. And it's like, you know, I had darkness. I have darkness in me in what happened, but I'm in the light. And that's it.
That's all I need to hear. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for coming in to
Thanks,
see us. I really admire you and appreciate it. To donate €4 to Childline, you can just text the word Childline, one word, to 57911.